Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Chain Attack.
Chain Attack is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated specializes in customer service, low prices, and prompt shipping. You can find our web store at www.discountgamesinc.com.
Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I am super excited because my Niners are in the Super Bowl.
I'm Jay, and I'm surprised that the Niners are in the Super Bowl because I didn't think they were going to do that comeback, Trevor.
Oh, no one did.
And I'm Josh, and the Steelheads won the hockey game that I attended last night, and frankly, the most hilarious part of this hockey game, which I took my daughter to, is that we walked in. We were a few minutes late because I'd had some meetings run long. We walked in, we sat down, and a fight broke out. Like, I mean, it was like picture perfect timing. And I also have a new love for hockey because of Tape to Tape, the video game. So,
which it has a bunch more things planned. I'm super excited for.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, we're pretty early in the development process, I think, for them.
Oh man, because I like after I beat it, I basically just like stopped paying attention to it at that point, you know.
So have you played? When's the last time you played it?
Oh, it's been. I bet it was October, November-ish, maybe. It's been months.
Oh yeah, so
you're saying I should go back?
No, I wouldn't go back yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't go back yet. But there's been a fairly large patch that allows you to build your own team. It's added a bunch of balance updates and animation updates, improvements to turning and shooting, and just a bunch of stuff. It's a better game now than it was. But the part that you'll be interested in, the part you'll be excited about, that is not implemented yet, but will be, and you should wait for it to be implemented, is they're adding much more roguelite elements, and they're making it a roguelite campaign with a bigger progression system, a gameplay loop, more elite teams, alternate bosses, different power-ups and trainings, more variation power-ups, more power-ups total, more relics, and an ability to upgrade your goaltender is just some of the stuff they have planned. So there's a ton of stuff on the way.
Very cool.
So the gameplay is amazing, which is what you enjoyed, right? So I'm excited for them to like actually take that gameplay and be like, okay, now we're going to make something more akin to Hades, right? We're going to have multiple runs where you have to increase things to be able to complete the runs and get farther and deeper.
You are 100% speaking my language.
Yeah, I mean, that's been their plan all from the beginning, but, you know, they had to get the game up and going and actually make it.
See, this is the problem with early access.
It's true.
But I'm still excited. I'm glad to know this. But it's like I easily would have just looked away forever.
So I instead of talking about Discount Games Inc., I'll use this opportunity to talk about something at Gameopolis and I guess the gaming industry in general. So this weekend is a Magic pre-release, and it every time a pre-release happens, it brings to mind how much some of my frustrating it can be to deal with Wizards of the Coast.
Okay.
So let me run you through some numbers.
Oh, I'm terrified for what we're about to learn here.
Okay. So for each person who enters the pre-release, they get for their sealed event, they don't do booster packs anymore. They have an actual pre-release kit.
Okay.
And you use that kit to make your sealed deck. And it's going to work better for you than if you had like seven packs or whatever is So it's designed specifically for pre-releases. Our cost on it is per person is $20.33. So Wizards of the Coast also sends some price support as well. My manager likes to do additional price support beyond what Wizards of the Coast does.
Okay.
So he'll spend about $6.87 per person in additional price support, which will bring it to $27.20 that it costs per person to run a pre-release event. And that's just the, when I say cost, I'm saying just the cost in magic goods, not man hours.
No, sure.
Electricity, etc. Right. So
don't come at me with your business talk there.
I know. Yeah. So there's also another store across town. They run their pre-releases for $25. So, you know, they just do the price support that that Wizards of the Coast provides, sell the kit, and, you know, so they're making about $450 per person. And because we are, you know, essentially competing with these other people and, you know, a manager, we have to get games played in order to get metrics, in order to keep our premium status. And, you know, my manager's concerned that if our price is too high, that means that, you know, people will go to the other store. So for each person who plays in a pre-release event, we make like around $2.70 because we're charging $30 as the entry fee for this event, which is insane to me. The margins that are dealt with Wizards of the Coast is bonkers, in my opinion. So we will really, I never thought that I would necessarily say this, or I don't know, when Privateer, you know, back in the day when Privateer Press implemented their map where it was like, you know, you could only give a maximum discount of 15% off. At the time I was giving 30% off, and it's funny that as time has progressed, I've become more and more in favor of having an MSRP and then a maximum discount that you can offer. And the thing that's like just absolutely bonkers to me about Wizards of the Coast is that they are aggressive on always increasing the cost of their product. But they didn't want...
Like what is aggressive? What does that mean?
Well, they have a... So the new play booster. There's a new product that they have called a play booster.
Okay. That
is releasing. And my cost on one of those is around $3.20. Back in the day, we were selling draft boosters for $3. And so... you know, our cost is up a fair bit from, or they're every, you know, few months, it feels like they are increasing the price of their products. And, but they don't want to have their customers complaining about the price going up. And so the diabolical thing that Wizards of the Coast did in response is they removed a suggested retail on their product. There is no suggested retail for Magic the Gathering.
So they're squeezing retailers instead of their customers.
Yes, 100%. And so you can go on TCG Player and there will be, you know, sealed boxes of boosters where it'll range from they're making, you know, maybe a couple dollars on each box that they sell to, depending on when you look. There was one time where we looked where they were selling it at $2 above cost. which after you have shipping and fees for selling on TCG Player, it's selling at a loss, and so I don't even understand what's going on. But it definitely, like, the hatred that I have for Wizards of the Coast sometimes for, like, this is all, and granted, I guess this is me guessing things or whatever, but my belief is that they like the fact that, you know, it's essentially game stores that are getting the squeeze, and that customers can buy the product at a super low price because, you know, they're going to have a budget of money that they can spend. And, you know, if their pool of dollars is $200 to buy Magic cards, and, you know, the cost of it is $195, that just means that the vast majority of that pie is going to Wizards of the Coast and not to anyone else, which is exactly what Wizards of the Coast wants, in my opinion, which again is just my speculation, but it's kind of a...
But just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
I mean, you're not wrong. anyways, that was my, I guess, what were you going to say, Trevor?
I was going to say, did you see that, sorry, trying to think of parent company, Wizards of the Coast, Hasbro was shopping, selling D&D to Tencent.
Oh, no, I didn't know that. Huh?
Yeah. So Tencent or however you pronounce them, the Chinese company that does WeChat and a bunch of other games. I think they own Riot Games at this point. But they have a bunch of, like, you know, little mobile games and other things that they do.
Yeah.
They are potentially buying out
D&D.
Oh.
That seems... I'm not sure how to process that. I'm not sure how that will affect me.
Who knows?
Josh.
Maybe they'll do a great job.
You are part of the Idaho legislature.
Oh. Hey. All right. We got to outlaw D&D.
The right. Chinese are looking to buy D&D. We have to
shut that down.
You gotta shut that down. Yeah,
that's right. All right, I like it. I'm happy to report, I can't remember if I got this game from a Humble Bundle or whatever, but I finished this last weekend, Howl. Did I tell you guys about this one? It's sort of it's a tactics game. Now I'm embarrassed. I can't think of... I even compared it to this the other day. What the heck is that thing called? Breach? Into the Breach?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So Howl is like Into the Breach, right? It's a tactics game where you have to pre-plan your move, and then in some ways you're trying to anticipate what the enemies will do. And it has this kind of, like... It reminds me of a little bit of that RPG that we played last year, Jay, that had kind of the medieval art style.
Oh, yeah. What
the heck is that one called?
Penitence or something.
Penitence, yeah. So it's sort of that art style married to the gameplay of Into the Breach. I beat it, which I'm very proud of, because it got pretty challenging at some of the towards the end game. You know, it was like I'd been plinking away at these enemies with maybe one hit point, and all of a sudden I get to this. I mean, it was the final boss, but it was like this thing had 12 hit points, and I was like, Jehoshaphat, like, I actually have to think about this and use my abilities and stuff. So anyway, a good little recommend, you know, kind of brain burner, like I said, turn-based tactics game, Howl. And the whole storyline is that you're this prophesied hero, and the only reason that you're able to fulfill the prophecy is because you're deaf. And, like, the reason it's called Howl is the enemies in the game are sort of these, like, werewolf-type creatures that if you hear them howl, you become one of them. And so the hero of the game, you know, can't hear them, and so is able to fight them, basically. So that was fun. It's very, very cool style. Mm-hmm.
Pentiment is on sale. It's 40% off. I just got the email.
Oh, my gosh.
It's time, Trevor.
For everybody.
So I did consider it briefly.
Briefly?
At 12 bucks. I mean, it's still on sale.
Oh, my gosh. I can still consider 12 bucks. I'm going to go, I don't know why you wouldn't buy it at that point.
I mean, because I've got a bajillion things in my library that I still haven't played.
I mean, that's never stopped me before, but you do.
All right. Well, let's move into our main topic.
And very good. I want to give a brief teaser for a future main topic, though. Okay. Loving our 4X game. I don't know what we're calling this. Competition preview, like strong choices by my co-hosts so far. That's all.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
How much of Deity Empires have you played?
Less than I have played of Songs of Conquest.
Oh, okay.
But I will be at the 5-hour mark-ish for both of them. So.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Loki Season 2.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
I want to start this off with playing one of my favorite games of recent Chain Attack of Guess the Budget.
Oh my gosh. And this literally is one of our greatest new additions. Let's just freely admit it.
Let's see, this is a 6-episode series.
6-episode. And again, as a reference point, another recent 6-episode series, Secret Invasion, was 211 million.
But it was also garbage. Okay. You can do this, Wheeler.
I think that this probably got a bigger investment. I'm gonna go 250 million.
I agree with Trevor. I mean, FX alone, it got way more of an investment. I'm gonna go with, no, I feel like Jay's tricking us, but you know what? I'm going all in. 300 million.
Okay. So the budget for Loki was 141 million.
I don't understand how anything in this world works.
Actors
were cheaper or what?
I don't understand. Like the thing that's amazing to me about, you know, these stats are that, first of all, if you compare,
they
like
could be made up and I wouldn't even know it.
Yeah, well, yes, yes. But if you compare like the set design of Loki, it just looks like their sets cost a lot of money, A, but also B, like a lot of thought and design, and which also means a lot of money, by the way. And then you compare it to Secret Invasion, where you're like, oh, cool, it's a warehouse or, you know, whatever, versus when they go to the TVA, it has a lot of design. Or when you compare the computer special effects, the special effects for Loki, quite good in my opinion. The special effects in Secret Invasion, when they had them, was like not great.
I mean, I guess
it didn't happen very often, it feels like.
All that they must have spent on scrolls and super scrolls.
Yeah, maybe.
Terrible writing, maybe.
Yeah, anyway, clearly.
Anyways, I thought you guys would find that
stunning.
Yes, because really,
I feel like every episode at this point, Jay, you should just bring like 3 shows and make Trevor and I guess the budget, even if I've never even seen the show.
That probably would be. I could do that with Netflix and.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. What was the budget for Suits?
Well, that wasn't a Netflix, really, but.
Fair point. I mean, don't get all technical all of a sudden.
Yeah, my bad. So, one thing I want to say to start things off, we've said this, lots of people have said this, it feels like the MCU has been a little bit uneven recently. There's been a fair number.
Like the kindest way to have said that.
Of low points. And, you know, as I was watching season 2, one of the thoughts that was in my head frequently was, this is why I love the MCU. Stuff like this. Like, why, this is the stuff I like. Why do we not have more of this? That's basically it. That was my.
Yeah. Do you have any answer to this question, by the way? Like,
I don't know.
So I'm interested in exploring something that my coworker said.
Okay.
My coworker said that this was awful.
Okay, well,
what happened? Okay, all have, right.
Do they have many other bad opinions as well?
I don't know how to really address that, I guess. They have mixed opinions. You know, some that you would agree with and some that you definitely would not.
Okay.
So I guess I don't know how to answer that.
Sure.
I was a little surprised by what he said. So that's why I bring it up. I don't know what your experience has been as far as what other people have said. You know, is this just universally loved by everyone you know? Or
one of my friends who's a pretty big MCU fan said that she thought the middle part of the season was maybe a little slow, but that overall she still loved it quite a lot. I think that's the most negative review I've heard from my friends.
Josh?
Sorry, ask me the question again.
Is everyone in your life in love with this series?
Yes. I was trying to think. There's not a lot of people in my life who have watched it. Like my son-in-law and I are about the only diehards that remain. So like none of my family, you guys are the sum total of my friends.
Wait, on the legislature floor, they don't talk about Loki season 2?
They haven't yet. No, we have not. We have not crossed that critical bridge.
No wonder I hate government so much.
Yeah, so anyway, I've had universal positivity, I guess, is my point. So my son-in-law and I both enjoyed the heck out of it, which is not to say that there weren't. I have to say that I felt like this season had a slower start than I would have liked, right? But
so I'm going to now explain why he disliked it.
And okay.
You can say whether or not you agree with it.
Okay.
He liked season
one. Did he like season one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He liked season one a lot because it was Loki doing Loki things. That's his own words.
Okay.
He feels like there was a major shift, almost a complete abandonment of the character in season two. Loki did not do Loki things.
I mean, I would say that, especially by the end, part of the point of the season was that Loki grew as a character. But
and still did Loki things.
Did he?
I mean, I can't remember which episode it is. The episode where they're like in the past and, you know, then his magic is untethered again. Like, yeah, that had a Loki flavor with sort of a different motivation, I guess.
I mean,
he's the god of mischief.
Sure. But he's also been doing a long character arc where that's been changing.
But he still did plenty of Loki things in the previous season. I'm mildly playing devil's advocate here because because when I heard him say that, I had not even thought of it up until that point. And at that point, I thought back at all the things that had happened in season two, and I realized how different of a character we had been presented in season two. And I don't know if it bothered me or not, but it became very bright. I don't know how else to put it. It became very overpowering in my memory at that point of how different of a character he was in season two.
Well,
and I don't know that I necessarily care or agree or anything. I just
sure. I mean, I could especially if someone is in love with the older version of Loki, then I could see that being an issue. And obviously, like the writers are the ones who create the circumstances that Loki's in. But in a lot of ways, Loki is responding to his circumstances. If he behaved the same way in season one or in the first Avengers movie, then the universe just ends and we're done, I guess.
I don't know that it has to be that polar. I think you can still have him saving the universe in a more Loki way.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, spoilers.
Yeah, well.
Sorry if you're listening.
I mean, saving the universe is kind of a subjective description.
Yeah. Sure, yeah.
Some might say that he didn't, actually. Like, one of my favorite theories that I read is that, you know, the big bad actually still won because now Loki's just tied up.
So I assume Trevor, your initial reaction was that because this is, I would say it's even more strongly a time travel story than the first season. Would you agree with that?
I would not. They both feel very
about
similar.
About the same?
Well, yeah. This feels, okay. This feels more like multiversal travel than time, right?
I'm thinking especially of the finale where
there was plenty of multiversal stuff in the first one as well. This is more time loopy than the first one.
Yeah.
Rather than traveling to destinations at the end, he's looping through time repeatedly. And I'll be honest, it felt a little forced. I preferred season one over this season. Especially when it comes to the time travel plot, the sets here didn't feel as interesting or as fun. It was a lot of the same stuff over and over and over again throughout the entire episode run. It just feels like, especially if you removed, I just forgot his name, Ki Hawaii Kwan, then this loses all momentum. Like, he carries this.
Ouroboros? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Short Round.
Okay.
Like, if Short Round's there.
He was a great addition to this season.
To the team.
I agree with you that I enjoyed season one more than season two, but I still thought that season two was very enjoyable, worth my time.
Well, the thing is, what I said about it is that the final episode of season two, to me, is completely worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
In a way, I end up thinking of the two as one whole season. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I get it. It's a series, but it's like they together told a story that was just a ton of fun to have gone through.
Yeah, I definitely liked the beginning of the season. I did enjoy the final episode. I would say that episodes 4 and 5 felt like they were floundering to some degree.
Yeah.
And in comparison to the movement of the plot line in every single episode that happened in season one, it just, that's where it kind of went off the rails, I guess. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed season two. I liked it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, it's time travel in the Marvel universe. I mean, what is not to like, but
there's two topics I have questions for you guys with. The first one is, why do you think that, you know, like the Loki shows are successful versus some of the other recent MCU stuff? And I guess my follow-up question with it is, do you think that part of it is specifically because of Tom Hiddleston and the fact that we are we just so in love with the original? Him. Well, are we so in love with the original characters that when a new one comes out, you know, Echo or, you know, whatever, that we just don't really care because we still love, you know, Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Hiddleston?
Okay, so there's two different things you put in there, and I don't agree with both ends of your concept. Is Tom Hiddleston great? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Am I so in love with Tom Hiddleston that I would that I dislike a new show that doesn't have one of the original? No, that is not the case at all. Do I care about Echo? Absolutely not. What a dumb character to pick. Like, of all the characters in the Marvel universe that you could choose to make a show about, why that one? I just, there's a lot of these choices that they're making.
I just thought they picked her as an excuse to bring Charlie Cox back as Daredevil, but you're right. They could have picked something else.
Okay, bring Daredevil back. She can still be in that show. I don't care. But
the
Echo character is not interesting to me. I've never cared about it. I don't care about it now. I haven't watched a single episode of that series, and I honestly, I'm probably not going to. There's a lot of characters in Marvel that I just don't care about. They have for anybody who doesn't know, go out to one of those, you know, Marvel databases of characters and just start looking through the vast numbers of them. There's hundreds and hundreds of them, and 95% of them you've never heard, nor do you care. Like, why do that when you have characters that we know and love? Why can't you grab one of those and make a show about it? Like, I guess that's my issue. Like, the secret invasion problem is we took one of the most beloved characters, and I love Samuel L. Jackson, but we did really poor writing, and he could not carry it even with the poor writing. Like, there's nothing he could have done. Tom Hiddleston, this didn't have the best of writing. He can definitely improve it. He can carry it to a degree. Obviously, if you give him really bad writing, I'm going to give you the same output, right? I'm going to say I didn't enjoy that. So I just don't know why we can't take one of these strong characters that we actually are interested in and throw in somebody new that we haven't seen before. I would watch that. If they'd given me a TV series on Doctor Doom, who wouldn't have turned into that?
Yes, tell me more.
Like, they have so characters.
Real quick.
So, go ahead, Jay.
This is pertinent, and I guess I'm curious if you guys have even heard of this. But have you guys heard of Marvel Spotlight?
No.
What? Should I have?
I don't know. Should you?
So no.
Okay. So Marvel Spotlight is an initiative where they want to lower the stakes of what's going on, but also have it be kind of disconnected. It's kind of them trying to respond to, you have to watch, 60 different shows in order to actually watch something. And Marvel Spotlight is supposed to be, you can just watch this show and it's fine. You don't need to do any homework. And so the first show in Marvel Spotlight is Echo.
Are you serious?
Yes.
You can't be serious. We're gonna take characters who are well established and we're gonna put it into the show that we want to be the Spotlight show, that you don't have to watch these other characters that we've just pulled in.
The next Spotlight one is supposed to be Daredevil Born Again, and the one after that is supposed to be Wonder Man, supposedly.
Why didn't they give us America Chavez? They have characters question. That they could throw in
yeah,
here.
Yeah, she's been in a movie told. Already.
Yes. Hire me. I'll come up with some ideas.
This is almost as much fun as watching Trevor try to guess the budget, Jay.
So many characters they could choose. And I understand that they're looking for diversity, right? That's why they chose Echo.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know Marvel well enough to know if there's another deaf character out there. I'm assuming there is. But it just feels like you could approach it some other way with some other character or something. I don't know. It just, I care so little about that character. And I think a big part of the reason why I don't care about that character is because of the way she was introduced
in Hawkeye.
Yeah. It was so uninspiring. Like, really didn't care about her.
It was a little forced, honestly.
Yeah.
I interrupted you, Josh.
Well, I just feel like I didn't answer your question, but sadly, my answer was not going to be markedly different from Trevor's. Like, I'm 100% on the Hiddleston train, right? And that's what I loved. And it's not so much that it was one of the, OG Avenger characters or whatever. So I felt like it was Hiddleston more than just that it was an OG Avenger. Right? That was the question, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I do think he did a great job. But I don't know. If the show was Iron Man season 2, we'd be saying, you know what? Robert Downey Jr. Is really charismatic and he can carry a show. Which it feels like there's a lot of the new ones that they haven't really proven themselves that they can carry a show.
Right.
I will say I continued to enjoy Owen Wilson on the show. Adding Short Round was great. There was a lot of stuff like that, I thought.
Yeah, it felt like Owen Wilson didn't have as much screen time or impact maybe in this season. You're agreeing with me, Jay? Is that you agreed with me before I finished saying it? Okay. All right. Yeah. Cool beans.
Other question I had, this is I guess, as good as anywhere to ask. But at this point, Marvel has cut ties with Jonathan Majors. Do you think that, you know, that we are going to still see Kang played by someone else, or is this just going to be an opportunity for them to, you know, cut this disastrous phase and move on to X-Men, or what are your thoughts?
Or Doctor guess? Doom or whatever, yeah. Right?
I mean, it's going to be X-Men. That's what.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The next movie that they have is Deadpool 3 with Hugh Jackman in it, and it's going to be the stepping stone into X-Men.
Okay.
Have either of you seen the Marvels yet?
I have not.
Okay. Well, then I will not bring up the end credits scene in the Marvels.
Okay. Mm. I mean, I really don't care if you spoil it.
Josh, do you care if I spoil it?
I don't care terribly because it's going to take me a minute. So.
So, at the end of the Marvels, Spectrum ends up in an alternate dimension. Surprise, surprise. And the alternate dimension she wakes up, finds her mother still alive, and she's being attended to by Beast.
Okay.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer.
It's a CGI Kelsey Grammer, but sure, yes. Yeah. It definitely sounds like Kelsey Grammer, and looks a lot like him, and it's definitely Beast. I know enough about her mother to know who her mother was playing as a character in the alternate universe. Maybe she's, let's see, was her name Monica Rambeau? Is that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is that her mother's name?
Yeah.
No, that's her. That's her name.
That's her name.
What's her mother's name?
Oh,
Maria Rambeau.
Okay.
Anyway, I'll find it as we're going through. But anyway, there's definitely it's definitely X-Men because they talk about the professor, et cetera, at the end of that movie. So it's kind of.
I think I knew that was someone else had spoiled that to me, or we talked about that, and I knew that was the case.
So
yes, the X-Men are coming.
So here's my personal opinion and my hope. I hope, and this isn't going to be the first time that the big bad's been recast, right? I mean, I realize that Thanos was a much smaller part before he was recast, but
recast. Who was he originally? I can look it up. I just didn't realize like he wasn't always Josh Brolin or whatever.
He was not, correct. Josh Brolin took over when he became a more bigger presence.
Basically, it wasn't Josh Brolin in the like cutscene, you know, the one
correct.
Original cutscene thing or whatever.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. No, it was some other guy in purple. I mean, the other problem is you're talking about, you know, purple face paint, right? It's hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit easier to see that hey, that's not Jonathan Majors. But here's my opinion. My opinion is they've given me all this setup that has been poorly introduced, and I've been waiting for the payoff. Don't steal the payoff. Give me the payoff. I don't care if it's somebody else. We've had other people recast in the MCU, and I have suspended my disbelief when it has happened. It's fine. Give me the payoff.
There's a grand tradition of recasting black men in the MCU.
Don't say it like that. It makes me feel really bad.
I mean, in fairness, Ike Perlmutter is gone now, and so I don't think it's being done for the same reasons. I think I agree with you, Trevor. So on the one hand, I want to see some payoff of all this build up. On the other hand, I wouldn't be super upset if they just like pulled the plug and were like, you know what, we have to start from ground zero because everything was so botched up. I'm a little bit concerned that they can't even salvage
the curse. I mean, I'm about to ask a dumb question, but if it's X-Men coming next, if that's what they move to, I can't think of that many big bads for the X-Men. Really? Right? I mean, Magneto, Apocalypse.
Dark Phoenix.
Whatever. The movies around her as a villain, but.
I mean, those are, you just named the three of the biggest villains in all of
okay.
Marvel,
and
right?
That's, I see what you're saying. Like, that could easily become the.
Cassandra Nova, Mr. Sinister, Sabretooth, the Sentinels, Mystique, Juggernaut.
I mean, the, the one that I would want them
to see. Oh, Juggernaut would be.
Yeah, Emma Frost.
The one that I would Emma want Frost. To see would be, oh, shoot. I just forgot his name. Leader of the Hellfire Club.
Pyro?
I don't think I know who that is. I'm embarrassed to say.
Dang it. I can't think of his name. I'll remember it here in just a minute.
All right.
I miss her signature would be really fun. And I'm always up to see more Magneto, so...
I seriously don't remember Mr. Sinister.
Sebastian Shaw.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I seriously don't remember Mr. Sinister as a character. Like, all I remember him as is the card in Marvel Snap at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the truth is one of the greatest X-Men villains of all time and is perfectly set up.
Who is?
It is the Scarlet Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, like, you're saying, like, it could be House of M?
Yes, why not?
I mean, that would be amazing, honestly. And then you could use that to explain, you know, a lot of the nonsense that has gone on.
A lot of the nonsense.
Do we need to... Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to... I mean, in 6 minutes, Trevor turns into a pumpkin. Any closing thoughts on Loki Season 2? There's part of me that is sad that a lot of people have given up on the MCU at this point because, again, it's the type of thing that I love about the MCU.
I don't care whether anyone else enjoys it. The only reason I'm sad is because it means that they may back off, right? They're going to let up on the gas.
Right.
And that makes me sad.
Well, they definitely are letting up on the gas. Like the number of MCUs, I think the only MCU movie releasing next year is Deadpool. Or this year.
Wow. Really?
Let me...
Whoa, don't fact check yourself, Jay.
My bad. So Deadpool 3 comes out in July. And then Agatha comes out on Disney Plus in the fall. And... that's it. That's all that they have for the MCU.
I mean, Deadpool 3 is enough for me.
Fair enough. And they do have two cartoons, X-Men 97 and Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. So they are laying their foot off the pedal a little bit while they, I think, figure out what exactly they're
We should prepare for next week to discuss like what little known or rare Marvel character you would rather see than Echo.
Than Echo.
All right. We can work on that. Let us know what you guys thought of Loki Season 2. And thank you for listening. Stay tuned for next week.